Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Anderson Advisors Podcast. I'm Dan Carlson on here from Carlson, right?
Yes.
Make sure I pronounce that right. From we're going to be talking about captive insurance. Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, man? We've been working together for a couple of years, and I just want to get people to understand why you do what you do.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it short. So my name is Van Carlson, CEO and founder of Strategic Risk Alternatives. Great 31B planners. What that is no different than a 401k planner. You know, 831B allows our clients to put away profits today to weather the storms for tomorrow.
Timely right now, right?
Yeah, right. And so, you know, Toby, we're not shying away from the 831B. Unfortunately, it's been hit in the media the last, really it's been hit by the IRS the last couple of years. They've won some cases. But in all honesty, those cases, you know, you got to love the American people. And of course, I'm one of them. I don't want to pay as little taxes as possible.
A little aggressive, huh?
Well, you know, it's like we're like water. You can only dam it. You know, we'll get a code. Some of you will get smart about it, look at it and go, well, wait a minute. It was intended for this, but maybe I can use it for this. And we've always been fairly creative in that arena. It's also what's also gives us our strength as a country. You know, we are innovators. And so unfortunately, the tax code was used for estate tax planning when it wasn't used for what it was originally designed to be. And that's a risk mitigation tool. No, very, very similar to what a lot of people experienced this past year of realizing that they're buying an insurance policy from their traditional insurance carrier. And the concept is they're covered for everything. I can't tell you how many times when I used to. Yeah. And unfortunately, you find out how good of a policy you have is when you need it. I can't tell you how many times when I used to sell property casualty insurance said, oh, I got an umbrella policy. I'm covered for everything. It's like, just because it's called an umbrella doesn't mean it's over the top.
I call it lawyer insurance. They'll oftentimes provide you a defense under reservation of rights and then say they're not going to be covered if there's big liability.
Yeah, exactly. And it's all, everything's in the fine print, right? Everything's in the... You know, and unfortunately, I think a lot of clients read their policies this year, sought out advice from their agents, and found out that pandemic coverages are not considered a coverage under the business interruption endorsement.
You see this every time. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm just
going to set the
table for people because some people have never heard of captive insurance. They don't know what we're talking about. And so real quick, it's basically being able to set up your own insurance company. That means it's captive. You own it and you're paying it premiums that you deduct. And those premiums go into a tax. Basically, you don't. The insurance company doesn't have to pay tax on it on the premiums.
Correct.
The money goes in, and it can continue to be invested. There's a risk pool, and voila, you're able to put this thing together. But you have very strict requirements on what type of risk you can insure, and that's what I'll ask you, man. Who is this for, and what type of risk can they insure?
Risk is not a problem. Again. Can't reiterate that enough after 2020, but our clients are successful business owners, fairly advanced in their thought processes and I would say more forward thinking. They recognize the risk they've taken to run their business. How do they mitigate that risk? You can't just keep doubling down on things. You can't keep getting bigger for the sake of getting bigger. There's strategic things that you have to do along the way. And anytime you can close out the gaps in the back room on risk, that's just good business management. And so, you know, our clients are from every industry you can think of. We have a lot of substantial amount of medical clients. I can't, you know, obviously they understand the asset protection and
let's use them as an example. Don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to make sure that anybody can understand this. So I go out, I get a regular insurance policy for my health and things like that. I get a regular business policy. If I'm a physician, maybe I have E&O. There's an omission. And maybe if I have I own my own business, I'll probably have some coverage for employees in case somebody sues me.
Yeah, GL, a slip and fall policy, walking through the front door, the office policy, stuff like
that. That's not what this is.
No, God, no.
This is saying, hey, there's basic stuff you can insure, but there's a lot of stuff you cannot get insurance for.
Well, Toby, a good example is when we first started designing policies around HIPAA violations. Mm-hmm. Because at one point, the policies wouldn't cover policy, general liability policies, when a doctor got them for their practice or even their cyber coverages, right? And if there was a cyber breach and there was a HIPAA violation that, you know, and then you know, states started enforce those. States started enforcing those on what they perceived to be abusive or gross negligence on behalf of the medical practice. You know, there was a pretty heavy fine leveled. Well, the insurance company wasn't paying that fine. So when we first started looking at risk for medical practices, for example, we were looking at that. And it really came down to political risk. And then last year comes along, and now you got even more political risk because who was telling you to shut down? It was the cities and state and local governments that were forcing medical practices to shut down. So now you have a political risk occurring where there is no direct physical loss on the property. And how's business interruption going to trigger? If you got one of those office policies and my practice caught fire and I had to relocate or just shut down for a month to rebuild,
I might get some. I'm going to have
actual physical loss. Yeah. The business interruption policy is going to treat you very well. It's going to pay for your employees. It's going to pay. It's even going to pay your if you had a loan on the building. It will even pay the loan on the building. But if it doesn't have that direct physical loss, you're on your own. And trust me,
in COVID, they're not covering it. Like most, like the insurance companies.
Well, to give you a little history on that, in 2009, the SARS cases were occurring, and actually Chubb Insurance lost the court case because the language in the policy, they were saying it's excluded under the coverage, and the court ruled against them. Mm-hmm. And so what happened right after that? Every insurance carrier out there made sure it was very clear. It says anything that's deemed to be a pandemic, it's excluded under the business interruption policy. So we've got a lot of court cases going on right now. I mean, people are, you know, attorneys do what attorneys do. They're, you know, words, every little word starts to mean, oh, this is the way I'm interpreting it. Which way are you interpreting it? Can we get to the judge and can we get a settlement, right? I mean, there's been a lot of lawsuits and there's going to continue to have a lot of lawsuits. But for the most part, from what we're seeing, at least here in the United States, all of them are being kicked out by the judge saying, there's no merit to bring a lawsuit forward and based on the language of the policy. So the insurance companies are winning and no surprise, right?
Well, the plain language is pretty clear in a lot of cases. There might be the outliers. There may be somebody who has a policy that was poorly worded, but what you know is that it's not going to be big, that there's an argument on both sides and that for the most part, they covered themselves against things like this. So you don't have coverage. Let's assume you don't have coverage. Let's assume that you're not going to be covered if you have an employee who gets somebody sick and that person gets somebody else sick. So somebody ends up suing you because you gave them COVID and there's no liability protection against that. All of those things are popping up. What do you do?
Well, you're going to find out real fast. So there's a thing called the right to defend on liability policies. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see if, even if there's no coverage, but you're being sued. A lot of times your general liability policies will cover the legal defense. That's going to be interesting, but that doesn't mean they're going to pay out. Yeah. So, I mean, to your point, unfortunately, the point I'm trying to make is the beginning of that is just starting to happen. I think lawsuits are going to be the next big thing we're going to see under this COVID, or if I did contract it. Now, I think work comp policies are going to handle your employees pretty well. But if your clients, your guests of your restaurant, the patients that walked into the medical practice, if they can prove that they contracted COVID in your location, if Congress doesn't do something or something doesn't happen sooner than later, this will go into courts. I mean, so you may have a policy that will cover you for the legal defense money. But I think if you had something where, and it's going to come down to case precedents because it's not just COVID that people contracted COVID. A good example is the norovirus in cruise ships, right? When somebody gets norovirus from a cruise ship and they go to a restaurant and they contract it there. Typically, the liability policies have responded and covered the loss of wages if the person was sick for a while and all that stuff. But, you know, at the level we're talking about today, about, you know, especially the amount of deaths that are occurring, I don't know if insurance companies are going to be so anxious to want to bite off on that. So it gets back to why you have to have these types of tools where you're self-insuring risk. IRS says, hey, you can't just take a dollar and set it off to the side. It's really similar to 401k. If I want a retirement plan for myself and my employees, and I just said, hey, I'm going to offer this retirement plan, I'm going to put this dollar over here. Well, in the eyes of the IRS, that's not a deduction. However, if you utilize the tax code 401k and you have rules and regulations set forth and, you know, you got to have a test, investment test, your ERISA rules and everything that goes into that, then you can deduct it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's minimum contributions, max contributions, as I say, and there's max contributions and distribution, mandatory distributions as well, right? So right. As long as there's rules involved, the IRS will allow you to set these funds aside for your employee and your self-retirement. The 831B just allows you to set aside. Again, you got to have rules in place. You got to have how much do I need? Can I fund this for? What's the distribution rules? How is it set up? Do you have an administrator? All those types of things. And that's what we do. That's why I said earlier, we're like a 401k planner. We just happen to be under the 831B tax code. Mm-hmm. But I really want to make it as simple as possible for business owners to understand that there's two tax codes that allow you to defer income out of your business. One is the 401k for your retirement of yourself and your employees. And the other one is an 831B that allows you to build up reserves, take income or take profits today, and be able to weather storms in the future. And believe me, there's lots of rules and regulations in it.
Let's go to the basics. In a 401k, I can put in what per employee $57,000 a year, get a deduction. How much can I put aside in these 831B plans?
So it's going to be based on your gross revenue of your practice. Mm-hmm. And typically in the first couple of years will allow you to put in more on a percentage basis. So I just know that there's a formula to it. There's a methodology to it. We certainly give the clients a cap, what they can max contribute. And it really depends on the industry. It depends on a couple of different variety of things. So, but it's all about building up a rainy day fund. There's also some, you know, we call it the four-part test. So you have to have it. And again, this is what we do. We do the risk distribution. We do the transfer risk, the risk distribution. We insure only things that can happen by accident. So we're not insuring business risk. Every one of these tests are very detailed. And we have good videos and all that thing to explain to business owners and clients. And then the last ones, you got to act on the principles of insurance. And so that's our job to make sure our clients are doing all four of those things to meet that test in order to elect under the 831B. And so we'll give the clients a determination of premiums. After 5 years that we keep funding, they don't have a lot of claims. We are going to require them to do a solvency test. So again, these are things that you learn along the way with us as business owners, but just know that, you know, we try to make it as simple as clear to our clients. We're not here to complicate their lives by no means by owning one of these vehicles. And I think I always tell business owners, listen, if you're having a good year, even a mediocre year, whatever, and then take a little bit off the top and park it off to the side, is this good risk mitigation? And if you're doing this deduction for the 401k for retirement and for yourself, it would seem a little crazy to me. You're not willing to do this for your own business.
Let's make it real. So you mentioned a doctor, but this could be any business, right? This doesn't just have to be dentists, doctors, but it could be a builder. Like I've seen some pretty cool policies. So I'm making, let's just say that I'm making a couple $1 million a year. I have extra cash. I'm growing my business. I'm a little bit worried. Hey, in the future, I want to make sure, because I know that in the type of business I'm doing, so you're a doctor, you're going to get sued at some point. I know that. In my practice, I know there's going to be issues. There may be issues with employees. There may be issues with doctors I hire. There may be, you know, whatever. Fill in the blank. I may have issues. I could put aside my war chest and deduct it. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. And so let's make it real. So if you said to me, hey, I've got a $3 million a year practice, mm-hmm. we're going to give you a ceiling of 10% in the first year on a gross revenue basis. So when you look at your professional liability,
$300,000 a year.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Now, in that $300,000, we're going to tower it into different risk profiles. So we won't allow you to go in 2% of that in any one policy. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a formula that we own. It's our methodology. And so mm-hmm. we're trying to be somewhat a conservative approach with business owners, what the expectations are. You know, unfortunately, you can put up to $2.3 million a year into these programs.
You can put, that's the ceiling, but I can't just take.
Yeah.
If I make $2 million, I can't just put $2 million in it.
That's why we cap it at 10% of your gross revenues. And this is really how insurance companies work. All they care about is your gross revenue. As your gross revenue goes up, guess what's going to happen? Your premium is going to go up too. Mm-hmm. And the idea is the more gross revenue you have, exposure you have for claims. That's a determining factor.
So if I'm grossing $10 million a year, netting 1.5, let's just say
yes.
And there's the doctor, and they're like, oh my God, I'm getting killed in taxes, right? I'm having 1.5, at least a million of it is in the highest bracket. I'm just getting crushed. Could they, in that particular instance, 10 million, they could put some percentage, 10%, so I could put $1 million into a policy?
Yeah.
And then I could deduct
that. Yeah, absolutely.
So my 1.5 million just becomes 500,000 from a tax standpoint.
Yeah.
Now that, that $1 million goes into a policy, what happens to it then?
Well, it can go into, it, more likely it'll probably go into several different policies mm-hmm. on a percentage basis. Like we may weigh out heavier. A good example, one would be dispute resolution. Also, we look at doctors as malpractice policies. What we're seeing is a big tick up on deductibles on traditional policies. And we'll also look for gaps. And unfortunately, there's a lot of gaps in malpractice insurance today. If anything, it's getting worse from that. And I say gaps, really, they're adding more exclusions, which creates gaps, right? So anyway.
They're figuring out where their liability is and making sure that they're not.
And they're trying to, well, they can't charge so much for you to say, I can't buy it anymore. I can't afford it. I mean, they would love to charge you as much as they could, but so one way they got to still keep the policy competitive and priced right to where you're willing to buy it is they got to exclude the back. That's why the policy keeps getting thicker every year. It's, just, it's not because they're adding coverages. It's because
what's hurting them and they're making sure that they're still making money. So you said dispute resolution. So that's like, if you're settling cases, if you're mediating things.
Yeah. And you know, what we see in the medical practice a lot is employer liability claims where they're mm-hmm. being sued for wrongful termination, sexual harassment. It's very difficult to get coverages a lot of times in the medical community because they have a tendency to have a higher than average claim ratios in those in that situation. So we'll put a policy together for that. Supply chain risk. I mean, flu shots, I guess COVID vaccines are next. You know, if you have a distribution of supply chain risk that you're determining on, we had some issues come up this past year with plastic surgeons. We've got several plastic surgeons as clients, and they needed certain things in order to do what they needed to do in order to stay open and also do their procedures.
So they made a claim against their own insurance.
And yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Yeah. So we saw a lot of those claims. We saw dental practices that were shut down. I mean, that triggered political risk. And also a thing called a third-party business interruption today is huge. I mean, if I'm dependent on my CRM system that holds all my information up in the clouds and they get compromised due to cyber, or I just can't get into them anymore because for whatever reason they got locked out, or, you know, what's the big term being, you know, they found out one of my key employees hit the Capitol building and now they shut me off. What's it called? The cancel culture we're in today. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are detrimental things to your businesses. And how do you react to that? You know, you better have a bucket of cash sitting around to be able to do it, because, you know, the banks aren't going to help you out all of a sudden.
So I put this money aside, and am I ever going to get it back? Is it gone?
Absolutely. No. And you're the shareholder of the company. After 1 year, one day, you could declare dividend. You can take it out as a long-term dividend rate. You can shut it down, pull out capital gains, or you can put it to work.
So this is where it gets interesting. So I put $1 million. What I want you guys to understand that are listening is it's a deduction against your ordinary income. But when it's taken out, it's treated as a dividend, which is taxed as long-term capital gains. So if you're in the highest tax bracket, you're at 37 right now, possibly going up to 39.6, depending on when you listen to this, you're guaranteed to be in the lower rate of capital gains, which would be 20%. And they're talking about going up to 28% for people over $1 million. You know, so let's just say that you're still going to save 10, 11% on the dollars, even if you took it right back out a year later. Is that fair to say?
100%. Yep. And you know, obviously we don't have a lot of clients. We do have clients that do that, but most of our clients hand it over to their financial advisor and manage the money, right? And of course, now it's like a 401k. Would I rather use pre-tax dollars to invest or after-tax dollars?
Well, this is really important, because in a 401k, I'm forced to do whatever like their five options are or something.
Yeah.
Are you going to stick people and say, hey, you can only do this type of mutual fund or whatever? Or can they just go trade away? Could they go do the AMC?
There's an investment agreement. There's an investment agreement, what they can do with the reserves. We just tell people, you know, you can't go, you know, I know you're mostly in Vegas, but you can't just go bet it on red, right? So on the roulette. So there are rules to the investment strategies, but I think for the most part, I mean, we have, of course, a lot of clients that just leave it in the bank, but and manage, you know, going forward with the risk. I think, I talk to clients and, you know, the motivation, obviously, the IRS, the reason why Congress even has this tax code is no different than the 401k. If it wasn't deductible at my company level, would I offer a retirement plan to my employees? Not unless they were all your grandkids, but I can't imagine offering a retirement plan and not being able to deduct it. And, you know, the 831B is too. I mean, it's called creating an incentive. And incentives are designed to create behavior, right? I mean, a certain predictable behavior. And so Congress came out with 831B in order to create a behavior. And this was back in 1986, I should add, that farmers were self-insuring their risk for crop insurance. Mm-hmm. That's why the code started out. And with time, now you're talking over 30 Mutual. Years, it's right. evolved a lot of other ways.
I'm sorry. I think they had three layers of tax that people were getting hit on, and they said, hey, we got to cut back one of the layers. I remember digging into this long, long time ago going, wow, okay, what they were trying to do is basically allow you to not get completely decimated if you try to insure some of these things.
That's a good point. Yeah, Congress loves this tax code. They think it's a way for business owners to survive. I mean, the biggest tax collected in our country is still payroll tax. They want to keep these businesses open. They want jobs.
Let's say that your practice, you get decimated by COVID. You have one of these policies. Do the creditors get to just go take this policy, or is this something that is still your company outside of your of the business that gets shut down?
You know, we have those conversations, and you know, unfortunately, you got to be honest with everybody and mm-hmm. answer the questions that are asked. But absolutely, they don't know that these things exist.
It's an insurance policy, and you own the insurance company, right? So you're an individual, you own the insurance company. So I guess they could try to take away your interest in the insurance company somehow.
Well, they could, but you'd want to pull a claim and get all the money. You know, there's a lot of strategies that we work with individual clients on, and we tell them the good, the bad, and the ugly. Sometimes mm-hmm. it is ugly, unfortunately, if they're in a bad situation. I tell clients all the time that if you're using insurance, I don't care what kind of insurance it is, you're not having a good day. I don't care if it's your auto insurance policy or it's your homeowners or it's your office policy. Of course, I always jokingly say the worst one is the life insurance, especially if it happens to be your life. Yeah. You know, none of it is a good situation. But when you need our stuff.
He's cleaning. Come on. That's good.
You know, one of the best compliments we can get doing what we do for a living is when our clients tell us, man, I've been with you for several years. I just sleep easier at night knowing I'm in your program. And I think that's a great compliment for our business, for our industry, is we manage risk in a way that allows you to sleep a little easier at night. And unfortunately, last year, if I had to guess, a lot of business owners slept a little uneasy last year, much more so.
You still had the pot of money set aside. So like, this is the idea. This is why I really wanted to talk to you, is because you've been on before. And we look at this stuff and we're like, all right, so you have your insurance company you've set up. And then there's an insurance company that you actually make the claims to, right? Isn't there a third company that's floating around in there?
There's a float. Yeah. It's ours, actually. But
And that's what it's doing. And that's what, frankly, that's what makes us, that's why you're here, is because a lot of people are trying to do everything all in one. And you get a little bit of self-serving stuff going on. And we want to go conservative. So there's a separate company that's actually the insurance company. Yep. You own your insurance company, but the premiums and everything else goes through a third party, Vans company, when you make claims. The whole idea is that you're putting funds aside for that what if moment. And if we've ever had a what if moment, it was in the last year. And
100%.
It's like the wake up call. Before that, the what if moment was 2008 and 2009. And then you had this crazy stuff going on in building. And, you know, so builders are going nuts. And it's like, hey guys, you're going to have claims about roofs, about what you build.
Construction defect is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And it comes 3 or 4 years later. Like it's going to come. But it's going to come a long time. Put the money aside now. If I just put it aside in my savings account, I'm still paying tax on it. So I'm losing up to 40%. This allows me to put it aside and I can deduct it. Now, van services aren't free, but you do the penciling it out. And when you look at this stuff, the growth should more than offset any costs. And you're keeping the 100% of the dollar as opposed to 60 cents on the dollar. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And in the way we structure it, our clients actually get their buckets of money are actually substantially larger than that, even the way we structure it. So if you do have to use, again, if you have to use the coverages that we're talking about, that you're self-insuring risk for today, that you can't buy traditional insurance policies to really, you know, transfer that risk, you actually get a bigger bucket of money than the dollar you put in. But again, these are all videos that we have and education. I think it's, you know, there is a learning curve to this program. It's not easy. Unfortunately, it's not like a 401k where it's just become a normal business practice and everybody's doing it. I would tell you a lot of your business owners still don't know all the rules and regulations of 401k either, right? But when it comes to the 831B, there's obviously a knowledge process, a learning curve we want to get our clients through. And we do a pretty good job with that. And of course, we don't expect them to, like I said, we don't here to complicate their lives. But at the same time, though, I, like it's a couple minutes ago, you know, it does make our clients sleep easier at night. The ones that were involved in our programs last year, the ones that had, I mean, we had a substantial amount of claims last year.
Against their own policy.
They were all, Yeah, they were very thankful. I mean, I can tell you this, we were paying claims out before PPP was, before the federal government was. I mean, we were sending money out to clients right away under a thing called a facultative clause. But, you know, from our standpoint, you know, we didn't want COVID to happen, but, you know, it became real last year for a lot of business owners. You know, we've already talked, you know, nothing slowed down. I mean, we had a fantastic year last year. We ended the year the record years. We really didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, this time last year, you know, everybody was betting what was happening. I think we just had started our first cases of COVID here in the United States. But by March, you know, and we were being ordered, it was a weird time for sure. It was a new time for us, especially
when the state started closing businesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Forcing you to stay home and work. And if you could, and all, anyway, so, you know, we didn't know how it was going to end, but man, we ended up a record year for us and the conversations haven't stopped. We just talked to a client here about a week ago, a pretty big construction company, and he does construction all over the country. And he said, you know, had you guys talked to us a year and a half ago, we wouldn't have known what you were talking about. But then here comes COVID along. And his comment to us was, this makes too much sense not to do it. And so we're hoping that, you know, this, we feel this will become a normal business practice. Insurance industry is not going to increase their appetite for risk. If anything, they're going to continue to contract it.
They're going to have to.
Yeah, you're not going to buy a policy where it's so darn expensive. You're just not going to buy it. At some point, you got to call no mercy, right?
They have to make money on it. So if it's a sure thing, it's a sure thing that they probably can't cover it. Or they're going to
or they're going to back it down or exclude it. And you're going to find I got a policy, but what's it really worth? And I'm not blaming the insurance industry. I think they do a good job for what they traditionally do.
Calculate things. That's
yeah. Well, think about brand damage today. Think about supply chain risks. Think about dispute resolution. The dependent on third party vendors to provide your ability. It's not just that I can go and lock my door and open it up and open up myself up for business. Now I got to be able to get onto my this independent third-party cloud service and be able to get in there and reach in and get my client's information. I don't have a file. I don't have a file anymore with a hard file I can pull out and go, you know what I mean? So the world's changed so much, and the insurance industry is not, they either refuse to recognize that or they just don't have any interest in it. I mean,
and we know the cyber stuff. This is the thing that freaks me out.
Cyber's huge. Cyber's scary.
Yeah. One morning you wake up and they've crashed your system and there's more hacking than you realize right now. So it's like, oh, great. So what happens if my database gets?
We offer a really robust cyber, especially with business interruption under cyber policies, because you may have a good cyber policy that, you know, protects your client's information and a forensic team that says, okay, how did this happen? But that doesn't mean the local news media reported on your business. So now you got brand damage happening. And then also you've got to build your reputation up in the public. Well, where's that good money going to come from? You know, I call it the double negative, and I'll end where, okay, if my expenses are going up, but my income's going down, you know, am I going to be able to go run to the bank and say, hey, I need to get a bigger line of credit from you?
Same thing.
No. Yeah. So this is just risk mitigation. Oh, by the way, this is what big companies do. Mm-hmm. They just happen to have a fleet of attorneys and a fleet of risk managers on floors of
McDonald's,
office.
Right? Didn't McDonald's make it popular because the Happy Meal? You put a hamburger and a toy together and the toy is like just perfect to get token on. Nobody's going to insure that. So they have to go insure it themselves.
Well, all these big companies, I mean, they don't even care about the tax deductions. They know, you know, who's selling Microsoft product liability, right? They have to self-insure their risk. And so,
and if you're public, you can't show the profit. Like, this is the thing. It's like a lot of the time they don't want to get in trouble. So they need to have the deduction. So they're not having shareholders beating them up. Cause if they said, hey, we're going to put, you know, 5% of our revenue aside for a rainy day, you're going to have shareholders screaming at you to pay it out. If you're paying it as an expense into something that
the nice thing is it still ends up as an asset to the company, right?
Yep. Technically, still on the balance sheet.
You know, still on the balance sheet. Exactly. So,
but it's not a profit.
This is great risk management. Lets you sleep easier at night. Mm-hmm. And I know it could be a lot more, and it can be very complicated and confusing at times because it's insurance. How exciting can we get about that, right? But I want your listeners to really know and understand that we have a simple process. We're not here to complicate their lives. I think every business owner, every risk taker out there, a risk taker to me is a risk taker that's willing to calculate the risk and then do it or not do it. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody just blindly goes into something because you're not going to last very long, right? So, you know, we explain a lot of things to clients, and but I think you definitely owe it to your business, you owe it to your employees, you owe it to your community. Believe me, your community wants you to stay open, to manage your risk the best you can, and utilize all the tools available to you. And I think, you know, to understand a little bit of what we do would go a long ways in mitigating all those things and allowing you to sleep easier at night.
Well, let's do this. I'll post your information with this video. So I'll put it on the bottom third, or I'll have my guys put it up there. If anybody has any questions, the Strategic Risk Alternative, you're up there in Boise, Idaho, right?
Yep. Good old Boise.
Yep. Good old Boise. And I'll put all your information so they can reach out. You're the appropriate person that they should talk to, or do you want to give us some other contact?
You go to our website, you'll see our team, you'll see our sales team, and I'm always happy to educate. And like I said, you know, we have really good educational videos. We've dumped some money into those because people want to watch and learn things at their own time. We get that. And so we did a pretty big investment into that, and it's been beneficial for everybody. And I think we're happy to share those with whoever want to see them. So
perfect. Well, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.